Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is one of those that comes along every now and then where I step back and I say, wow, what a privilege to get to know this person a little better, to step into this world, to step into somebody's life in a way that allows me a new perspective. And Zaradash Ahmed is one of those people. He's one of those filmmakers. He's a storyteller. He's a journalist. And we're talking about his film today, Nowhere to Hide, but we get into so much more than just the film. We talk a little bit about the technical aspects of how difficult it was to make a film about the Iraq War and what's going on there in post-conflict and post-occupation in central Iraq, actually, in an area called the Triangle of Death. And if that hasn't got your attention, I'm not sure what will. But you need to see this film. This is a film that was difficult to make. It's not character-based. It's very much driven by kind of the events that unfold for a man who's a nurse, who's a healthcare provider, but a family man who cares about his community. He cares about his country, and he cares about others in a way that I think is compelling for us, but also a real challenge. And watch as Nori and Zaradash attempt to humanize the victims of this crazy conflict, this ongoing war in Iraq. So stay tuned. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation about the film, Nowhere to Hide. And don't forget, face2facelive.ca for more interviews. We're over 300 interviews now recorded, and moving forward, I don't know what the next 300 are going to be like, but stay tuned. And don't forget, you can also support the work that I'm doing here on patreon.com and rabble.ca for more information about other podcasts as well. Stay tuned. Zaradash Ahmed and Nowhere to Hide. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today. Zaradash Ahmed is here with us. He's a filmmaker. He is a documentarian. He's a storyteller and a guy with an incredibly important story to tell. Zaradash, thanks for joining us here today.
You are welcome.
We're here to talk about your new film, Nowhere to Hide. Before we dive in, I know you're in New York, and we're doing this interview through Skype. But tell us just where you've been the last couple of days. I understand you were in Washington. You're in New York. We're on the edge of a theatrical release of your film. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on and what you've been enjoying at the film on the film festival circuit.
Well, it's been a long journey since we got the grand prize at ITFA, the world's largest film festival in Amsterdam, November 2016. And ever since, the film has been just like a tornado for us. It's been a tsunami of demand to see the film. I've been almost in all continents throughout this last month. But briefly, July, it's dedicated to be in state and go with the film. We started from Brecce, International Film Festival in the beginning of June. And then I came back to New York. Then I left for AFI DOC, American Film Institute Film Festival. And now I am back here. But before AFI, we also had in New York the opening night at Human Rights Film Festival in Lincoln Center, which it was very successful evening. And we were awarded one of prestigious awards for Kurdish filmmaking, both my protagonist, Nuri Sharif, and I. So now we are preparing for the theatrical release in June 23rd to June 29th in New York. And then later on, it's leaving for LA.
So Zaradash, it sounds like you've been very busy. I don't know when you found time to sleep, but before we dive into the film and I want you to sort of unpack a little bit more about the story. Congratulations. It's a remarkable film.
Thank you.
It's a film, you know, I say this a lot. My students need to see it. My listener, everyone needs to see this film for so many reasons. Of course, it's about the Iraq War. It's about violence. It's about terrorism. It's about reaching out to others. It's about loving your neighbors. I mean, the list goes on. You've covered so much ground. And
thank you.
And you've chosen Central Iraq to tell your story. Can you give us a little bit of perspective on Nuri? And even from a filmmaking perspective, Zaradash, you've really kind of you've combined not only your perspective in storytelling, but his as well, in a really quite an interesting way.
Yeah, it's been a very hard process to be honest about that making the film, because such films are very difficult to make. One reason it's you have to deal with the safety issue, which was very dangerous both for Nuri in the first place, and then the filmmaker, which was me, and also to cover just to gather and make a film, gather information, gather stories, and trying to put them together and make a film about Iraq War, it was very difficult because, as you know, Iraq been throughout these last 30, 40 years from war to war. It's been one war ended, another started again, all back to Gulfport 80s and then 90s, Kuwait War, and then later on the sanctions, and then 2003 invasion by the American troops and the alliances. So Iraq never been resting, and that also caused a lot of distrust and a lot of in a way conspiracy about those who come to Iraq in order to film or in order to make a documentation or a reportage or just working as a journalist. It's almost impossible. So these were the challenges all the time. We had to deal with it during the process of making the film. The other thing was in the beginning, I, together with a Norwegian doctor, we wanted to document about the Iraq War. Not character-based. Nuri Sharif was not in the film in that way we portrayed him later. We wanted to document the war in Iraq. For that, we went there and we found out this area that I was interested in. It was almost impossible to go there. And not almost. Some of the places was literally impossible. They call it no-go zone. So literally it's no-go zone. But through this doctor, this Norwegian war surgeon doctor, which he's been working for many years in Iraq. He's been building a really good network of medic, which we could rely on. He introduced me to that network, and we were thinking maybe we, through that network, we can get in insight and access.
So you had a so you had a relational connection. You were
exactly
you were embedded. You were on the inside.
Yeah, but not the, on the right side, not in the wrong side, because you know my choices was I was not embedded. I could choose. That why I had two choices: either embedded with the American, or embedded with the local authority, or the rebels or the militia groups, where there's it's a Shia or Sunni or other groups there, which I didn't like. I could not join them because you are embedded and you cannot go to places you want, and you cannot get in touch with reality on the ground. So this network of medic, they were there for me. Like they were doing whatever I wanted to do. They were taking me wherever I wanted to go, using the system of the ambulance and also transportation, accommodation, and all this kind of logistic. They provided for me. It was a very good organizing in a way. And those people were dedicated people. They could take a bullet for me because they trusted me. That I was interested in the case. Those people were working every day with explosions, and nobody was taking care of. Nobody was listening to them. Nobody were interested in just hearing about what they were going through. So when I went there, it was like they appreciate me just to be there. So that's why I could work with them.
You know what's interesting, Zardoz, to me is that Nari's relationship to the camera, and I would imagine his relationship with you, that, you know, you just briefly mentioned that, you know, the trust and the, basically you're saying, I embedded myself with the locals and I got access. And to me, that really comes through I mean, he's such a compelling man, and I want to know, I mean, immediately, I want, from your establishing shot of him wandering through towards the camera in the desert, I want to know who this guy is. I'm interested. I'm shocked by everything I'm seeing, and yet deeply curious. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, just if you are a teacher, and it's everything. It's about how it must the thing that you are teaching. It must have affected you before it affect your student, right? The same with the filmmaking. The subject affected me. Therefore, I stayed with the film, and then the film became the way that you are describing it. Because that's a very beautiful description, you know, like you love everything about the film. You like to know him because the language was right and the film was not easy to make. We decided to take these difficult decisions, not the easy way out and building just like all the other films that is out there about Iraq, and then one side of the story and never so close, never so humanized. So the film, its attempt to humanize the victim of war in a way that we relate to them, empathize with them. So that took for me 6 years. In the film, it's 5 years of filming. 1 year coaching Nuri and other people around these towns in the beginning. 1 year, I coached them how to use the camera, how to use the language of visual, a visual language to bring something out that they usually don't care about, like visually they pass by, make them filmmakers, make them storytellers. But the thing is, in the beginning, there were 12 medics. I coach and I use them from 12 different towns. But Nuri's town and Nuri's story was pressing himself out of all the other things. And around 2013. So lots of things in Iraq changed because of, as you know, ISIS and their advances. And they were marching, they were taking over town after town. And Nuri's town became target for ISIS. So we needed to bring him in front of the camera and make that film about him, because I felt like I could not turn my back on his story and just continue my film, my story. And you asked me about the point of view. So one of the challenge thing that faced us in the film, it was, who's the point of view in the film? Is it mine as a filmmaker, or is it Nuri as a person trying to survive something he haven't asked for, such as war in Iraq? So we decided to clean up everything that it's contradict or crashes with my point of view, to just clear the way and giving him the whole view, giving him the whole opportunity visually and also story-wise to allow him to tell the story the way that it's, he feels it, the way he senses it, the way his family go through it. So that's why the film is very intimate, close portrait of a war and trying to survive it.
Well, I think you've done a beautiful job of drawing me in anyway. And I think by the sounds of it, the folks that are seeing the film and others that will, in a really relational and intimate way, you've welcomed me in. And Nuri has welcomed me into his life in a way that I would think would not be easy to do, and in a truthful and an authentic way. It's quite remarkable. You know, Nuri at one point talks about the war. I mean, what a mess, you know, from somebody who must be living within it. I mean, it's to call it a mess is an understatement. For somebody on this side of the world looking at it, it's complicated. It's confusing. We mixed messages. How do I make sense of it? But even Nuri calls it an undiagnosed war. What do you think he means by that?
Undiagnosed war is like every Iraqi you talk to. Tell him why there are war. Just ask a very a naive question about that war. They don't know how to answer you. They don't know, really. They don't know who's fighting who. And now I'm saying who's fighting who, I don't mean like the guy, the neighbor, suddenly he's becoming, taking part, either becoming a terrorist or becoming a governmental army or whatever, or working with American or whatever. I'm not talking about that. That's it. That's in a micro level. But in a more overall, this big picture level, where you see other regional powers involved. You see, there are big giant funders for that war. War is not only a Kalashnikov. So you just try. It's a well advanced. It's like well planned. It's everything is timing. Everything is it has some kind of purpose. A guy blowing himself somewhere that has a purpose. It's not just coincidence. So for Iraqis, they don't understand who's behind this war and what's the purpose of it. They only know they have to deal with it, and they never ask for it, and it's burning little by little. People becoming a fuel for that, and a lot of propaganda day in, day out, going around with putting everybody against everybody, and there you go. You don't get any answer. You don't find any logical thing by trying to just look at it. You have to go back to the history. You have to try to understand who's benefit of it. And the normal people, an average people, they don't think like that. They are not analyzer. They are not a political analyzer. They are not militaries. They are normal people. And Nuri, he's a medic. He's a normal guy. Despite all odds, he tried to help people. He liked his job. He liked his town. He liked his family. He tried to do the best for them. And he's a good-hearted guy. So he speaks from the way he sees things, because That's the message of the film. That's we like when we were facing a lot of these questions, the what we want to tell by this film. In the end, I found out the only way to communicate with the outside world, with the audience, was through the feeling, through this emotional feeling, which you don't need language, you don't need culture barrier. There are no any cultural barricade to hinder one another to understand that feeling, because it's a very human feeling. It's like a very basic feelings. You don't need language for that. That was my only tool to just bring that feeling out, to trying to humanize it in order to for you to see it, you as an audience.
There's a moment in the film where I think Nari is filming a car where a family didn't quite all survive an attack, and yes. I think the man asks him, "Why are you filming?" And it's really quite a moving moment. And his quick, immediate response is, "Because I need to." And
beautiful.
Then, yeah, and then earlier in the film, he talks about preserving memory. And I just, you know, exactly. Nari is a healthcare provider. He's a nurse. He's clearly a lifesaver, but he's also a masterful storyteller.
Yeah, that scene, it's a heartbreaking scene when he came back with this material, because I have more other footages connected to that. I didn't want to use it because it's too sensational. But the responsibility, and that's exactly that scene. We had a lot of problem with placing it, where to exactly to give it the right place, you know, to localize it in the story in the right spot. It took time. We had to change the dramaturgy, and this scene was the one that we moved it back and forth to just get the feeling of that here is the right place. And just because of exactly why he's filming, because he have to. That was the very, very main reason for me. That was the one of the reason that made me care about Nuri's story. It was seeing that in him. Because there were nobody else care about what was going on with them, what was going on there, what was happening to them. Nobody would care. Nobody did any give any second of the intention to that. That nobody care about them, because anytime American go into a place, there are always media after them, and also jihadists going if they are in the Middle East. Jihadists follow them just like flies, and then you have all the journalists going. And once they leave, everybody leaves again, and then they forget about the civilians. They forget about those who they life destroyed. Nobody cared about them. Nuri cared about them. He didn't have the tool. He could not transfer that to the outside world. I became his tool, and I was willing to be that tool because of these scenes, because of this material, because of the will of telling, you know, telling us this is what's happening to us, and we should know about it. We should not let it just go in the desert, buried somewhere.
We absolutely should know about it, and I think that's what's so important about your film. I mean, it's a great film, but it's also an important film. It's one of those that crosses both of those lines, it seems to me. And I trust. I mean, I'm hoping everybody gets to see it. I love Saradash. I love the scene, and I think there's a couple moments where you've got quite a wide shot of Nari with the tripod on his shoulder as he's wandering out of frame. And I couldn't help but think of the rifle on the shoulder of the American soldier or the jihadist.
It's the triangle of death, the scene where he's explaining about the triangle of death. Yeah, right.
How does somebody like Nari and many, many others, I would imagine, maintain any kind of sense of hope. I mean, near the end of the film, he's asked by, I think by the government or by the military, to come back to where he worked in the hospital, basically to devastation and to death and to destruction. And yet this man still maintains hope, and he still, I mean, he's rolling his sleeves up in every possible way to not only to tell this story, but to help, you know, to help others. Go way beyond his own family, and he's reaching out in a variety of ways. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I think the scene you are talking about is where the Ministry of Health asking him to start going and check the hospital for rehabilitation, to rehabilitate the hospital after the fall of the town. I think one essential thing about human, it's the power of adaptation. Mm. Every human being has a tremendous power to adapt. That's in our nature. But we are detached. We are not attached to it as it used to be. We are distanced to that attachment, that this ability of adapt to things. We think it's very difficult, but once we are in the situation, so some magically or miraculously wise, you just adapt to it, you know. Because I've been experienced war, just being from that part of the world and experiencing all these different wars that I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation. It's just so strange, because sometimes when you are in the war, it's also very quiet. There are moments that's beautiful. The contrast is too big that life can become very shiny, very beautiful. That you want to hold it. You don't want to lose it. It becomes more valuable. And of course, if you have a family, if you have kids, if you have a family that you are responsible for them. So your adaptation ability will increase even more. So somehow, with a combination of faith and belief of the overpower, like if we can call it God or the creator or the religion, because these people are somehow connected to that. In combination with that, they somehow finding ways of surviving.
So your answer is adaptation and some believing in something bigger than themselves.
Exactly. That's gives you the power of go further, because tomorrow will be better. That's the idea. And also when you lose everything, like Nuri does in the film, you know, he lost everything, the house, the job, the school for the kids, everything, and became somebody, a number like all the other thousands and millions of these IDP, internally displaced or refugees. But in reality, they are not numbers. You know, they don't look at themselves as a numbers. They're still human. They still have hopes. They still look at the future. They still see the kids grown up and building their lives, building their future. So they live with that hope. They live literally with that hope. And they adapt to this new reality where there are no water, where there's staking heat out there, where there is nothing clear about tomorrow, how is it going to be. But you have to adapt to it. You need to adapt to it. You need to have this energy to go forward, and therefore he's otherwise his family will collapse. Otherwise they will be in total desperation and depression, and God knows what's next will be. So people there, they have faced a lot of different type of wars, and their faith have become even more stronger than before. Combination with these two things, they managed to go further, and that's in our nature. That's in our nature to the will of survival is more powerful than desire of destruction. That's
Nari seems to also have this sense of the other as well, you know, of reaching out, and maybe that's partially his religious conviction and his faith and his belief, but also he's got this willingness. It seems anyway. He seems to have this gentle soul that wants to help, that almost needs to help. Like the fact that he needs to take these images, he needs to record this, he needs to preserve memory. I need to help others. I need to reach out. That's the sense I got from him, which I just, like, he's got this spirit of generosity about him. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but
of course, yeah, you know, I know Nuri very well. You know, even before the film, during that year that I was coaching them. You know, he's a very good-hearted person, and it's not strange because he's working as a medic, and you know those people how their life look like. You know, in Iraq today they have maybe one of the most dangerous profession ever. They go to an explosion, for example, and then you have triple explosion, double explosion, triple explosion. All kinds of, you know, experiments with so once they go to a crime scene, let me say a car bomb or a suicide bomb or assassination or whatever, so that's not, it's not over. Usually there are another bomb or third bomb. There are incidents that there was seven time bomb, you know, seven times, never ending, like from. It was like a nightmare, and often it's, they wait for them to, the ambulance is the one who's saving people, then they targeting them by snipers, by other bombs, other car bombs, sticky bombs, all kinds, you know. And the other thing, when people losing their beloved, they also lose their temper, they lose their rationality. So who's paying for that? They go in the hospital, and they have, some of them are military officers. They go with the heavy weapon, go into the hospital. You have to save this guy. You have to save him. And then they start to beat people, you know. And who's getting the most humiliation is those who's trying to save in these people, you know, the medics, the doctors. So they are in a constant fear and danger, but I think because it's valuable for them, it gives them something that they only can feel, that only they can get that energy and keep themselves human and willing to help other, willing to, you know, repair these destroyed bodies, these destroyed people, you know, like we see in the film.
I bet Nari would say, "I don't really have any other choice." That would be my guess. If he,
I think he's been saying that many times to me, and he's a good-hearted. Before even documenting him, I knew very well that he was a good-hearted. I knew he took bandages to people. I knew he visited people that nobody were caring about them, just totally forgotten, totally isolated from the society. But he was the one going there, taking bandages, cleaning their wounds, and trying to support them without any thing in return. So nothing in return. It's maybe in return is just you feeling you are dedicating your life to something valuable, which I also do throughout the film. I don't expect something in return, because, you know, there are these things. Probably you do as well. You know, when you need to do something bigger than yourself, and it's not material. It's more about to make a point in your existence. You know, it's just, otherwise it will be pointless. You know, just multiplying and having a family and then die. that life, it's about something more. And I think for them, it's about that, to help in other people in need. For you, it's to bring the word. For me, it's also being, you know, dedicating my knowledge to somebody trying to tell us something. It's like that. That's the way, that's why we are human. That's why we are connected, all of us, because we are connected through not through materials, through values. And values, there are nothing in return except good thing, better value. So that's the return. You get back the good values back. You know, you don't get back money. You don't get back material. So you get that feeling that you participate, you gave something, you gained something better.
Well, it's Zaradash. It's a message that, you know, it's a message that needs to get out there. It needs to consistently get out there. It seems to me. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better time, you know, to release the film. And I wish you all the success in the world with it. I think it's, you know, it's a war film, but it's really it's a film about everything that makes us human, and that's what I think is so remarkable about it. And it's a story that needs to be, well, it's a story that has been told, but now needs to be seen and heard by many others. Can you tell us, just as we wrap up, can you tell us a little bit? It's going to be released. You've got a theatrical release coming up, which we'll put more information about it on our website. But you're in New York right now. And what's next?
Next is 23rd. We start the theatrical release in New York. I think it's East Village. Apologize for my information is not fully here in my head. But the theatrical release will start in 23rd to 29th. And after that, I will leave for LA. I will have the theatrical leave from 30th to 6th or 7th, I think. And then it's Vancouver, it's Toronto, it's Washington, San Francisco, Michigan, I think. And more towns are coming, wrapping. So hopefully we get more people to see this again. To try to, I'm a messenger. I'm just like you. I'm bringing this message because it's concerning everybody. Despite the distances, so we are all connected in the end. And if something happened in the very end of that side, it will affect the other side definitely. So it's like we are all connected. More or less in what's happening around us.
Well, it's a message. That's the message that absolutely comes through. It comes through clearly on so many levels. It's deeply relational and profoundly intimate. And I so love the way you end the film with Nari talking about his wife and about his children and about how without them he would be nothing. And as if this is, and yet he still doesn't know what the future holds, and yet he moves into it with courage and with grace and with generosity. It's wonderful. Zaradash, thank you so much for your time today. We've been talking with Zaradash Ahmed about his new film, Nowhere to Hide. Zaradash, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much to dedicate the time to me to have me there. Hope we talk again some other time.
I hope we can do that too.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.